ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 10th of June. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. More chaos on the streets of Los Angeles. The city is cleaning up after a third night of fiery protests against federal immigration raids, with fresh demonstrations already underway today. In what could be a significant escalation, multiple US media outlets are now reporting that Donald Trump has deployed Marines to the city to assist the National Guard. We'll hear from our correspondent in LA shortly, but first, Bridget Fitzgerald filed this report.
Police cars, dented and vandalised with smashed windscreens, lay abandoned on a major freeway after the most intense day of protests so far. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass blames the federal government for escalating the situation.
Dial back time to Thursday. None of this needed to happen. Why did we need to have raids here? It was very clear that if raids happened here, that the community was going to respond in a very negative way. I tried to make that case. Unfortunately, I didn't succeed. I was very hopeful that the federal government would not have deployed the National Guard.
Protests began in the city on Friday when people gathered outside a federal detention center demanding the release of dozens of people arrested by federal immigration authorities during raids carried out across LA. In response, hundreds of National Guard troops deployed by President Trump fired tear gas, flashbang grenades, and rubber bullets in an attempt to disperse the crowd. The clashes shut down the 101 freeway and resulted in several self-driving cars being set on fire. Mayor Bass says any protesters that used violence will be dealt with appropriately, but says the city was quiet and peaceful before the immigration raids.
But all of that creates fear and tension in our city. And you know, we have to think about the families on Friday, three different workplaces where raids took place. Many of those family members have not been in contact with their relatives. They don't know where their relatives are still here. Are they in Southern California? Have they been shipped to a country that maybe they don't even know? And so the instability that creates, and we went through this before in the last Trump administration.
At a rally on Monday, family members of workers detained called for their release. Montserrat Arizola's father was one of those taken.
My father is part of this community. We demand immediate release of all the workers detained that day. I was present during the raid. I saw with my own eyes the pains of the families, crying, screaming, not knowing what to do, just like me. That's why the families demand free of all workers, legal representation and due process.
Several dozen protesters have been arrested. President Trump has cited a legal provision that allows him to mobilize federal service members when there's a rebellion or danger of a rebellion against the authority of the government in the United States.
Bridget Fitzgerald reporting there. Now, California's governor says the state will launch legal action against Donald Trump's administration for deploying National Guard troops and what officials claim was an unnecessary escalation. Still, President Trump is staunchly defending his decision. North America correspondent Lauren Day is in LA. She joined me a short time ago. Lauren, the political rhetoric is heating up.
That's right, Isabella. The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, has launched legal action against the Trump administration for deploying the National Guard, which he said really escalated these protests into the kind of scenes that we've witnessed for the last three nights on the streets of LA. He said that the president was trying to manufacture chaos and crisis to suit his own political ends. Now, Donald Trump, for his part, has responded by saying that if he hadn't done so, LA would have been completely obliterated. And he's continued his personal attacks both on the mayor of LA and Governor Newsom. Here's a bit of what he had to say a short time ago.
He's destroying one of our great states. And if I didn't get involved, if we didn't bring the guard in, and we would bring more in if we needed it, because we have to make sure there's going to be law and order. A disaster happening.
Lauren, as you say, tense politically, but what is happening there on the ground today?
Well, Isabella, it's a very different scene here today to what we saw last night when it was just absolute chaos in downtown LA. There were bangs going off constantly. There were cars on fire, bins on fire. It was really quite a lawless scene last night. Today, it's very peaceful. Hundreds of people have gathered here in LA near the City Hall. You might be able to hear the protesters in the background. There are still choppers overhead monitoring things, but it's nowhere near what it was last night. Now, the protesters today have gathered to protest against the arrest of a prominent union leader, David Huerta, who was swept up in these immigration raids that kicked off these protests last week. And they've been singing, chanting, and just peacefully showing their support for a community that really feels under siege right now. LA is a city of immigrants, particularly from the Latino community. And a lot of people that I've spoken to today say that they have just been living in fear since Donald Trump took office, but particularly since these immigration raids started last week.
Lauren Day in Los Angeles. A civilian ship seized by Israeli forces in the Mediterranean has arrived at an Israeli port almost 18 hours after it was intercepted off the coast of Egypt. The Medline has been trying to deliver aid to Gaza, and lawyers for the crew argue it was illegally targeted by Israeli authorities. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran is in Jerusalem. Matthew, what's the latest on the ship?
Isabella, good morning. The ship has docked at Ashdod Port, which is about halfway between Gaza and Tel Aviv. It's a major cargo terminal, but it is also a naval base. And it's from there that the 12 crew, including the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, will be taken to a detention facility and then to a court to arrange for their deportation. It was a very slow voyage today, considering that the ship was intercepted off the coast of Egypt in the early hours of the morning. And the distance from that point to the port really isn't that large. It's fueling speculation as to Israel wanting to bring the ship into dock under the cover of darkness to try to control what can be seen of the Madeleine and the crew. It must also be pointed out that while Israeli authorities continue to describe the crew as simply seeking selfies here, it is releasing its own photos of the crew as they are now on land in Israel, trying to control that narrative. Now, the ship was in international waters when Israeli forces intercepted it before its final approach towards Gaza, carrying a symbolic amount of aid. And it's because of that that the crew's lawyers argue they shouldn't have been stopped, insisting Israel didn't actually have the authority to intercept them and arrest them, bringing the campaigners to Israel for deportation. Here's one of their lawyers, Hadil Abu Saleh, speaking at the Ashdod port earlier.
We're basically talking about people who were sailing in the international waters, and then Israel basically captured them and abducted them into Israel. And even the legal procedure they are willing to take is not it does not apply to them.
That's Hadil Abu Saleh speaking there. Now, not everyone shares that concern, though. We've spoken to a former senior Israel Defense Forces lawyer, Dr. Eran Shemir Bora, who's told us that Israel can operate in this way, partly because it's had a naval blockade of Gaza in place since 2009. He says that even a UN inquiry backed the validity of that back in 2011, following an incident when Israeli forces stormed a Turkish ship and nine people were killed. Now, this is a point which will likely be debated again and again as a result of this current incident. And even though the outcome is quite different to that 2010 incident with the Turkish ship, Dr. Eran Shemir Bora insists that the legal authority is there.
So once a naval blockade has been imposed, there is a right, even an obligation, to enforce it. Enforcing could be done not just with respect to actual breach of such a blockade, but also if there is an attempted breach.
Dr. Eran Shemir Bora from the Israel Democracy Institute there. Matthew, has there been any global reaction to this?
Isabella, we've heard from the Turkish government, which has labelled it a heinous crime by the Netanyahu government. And French authorities say that they have told the Israeli government that consular assistance must be offered to the six French crew who were on board, including one who is actually a member of the European Parliament. Outside of governments, we've heard from the UN Special Rapporteur for the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese. She is saying that other ships should try to make the same voyage following up from the Madeleine. And it really does show that while this is an outcome which was certainly expected, it certainly highlights the restrictions Israel is placing on Gaza, something which is particularly heightened during this current intense humanitarian crisis. Isabella?
Matthew Doran in Jerusalem. Emotions are running high for families in Ukraine and Russia as both sides start one of the largest prisoner exchanges of the war so far. It's the first group to be returned since the two nations launched their second round of peace talks earlier this month. It'll involve returning captured soldiers, but also repatriating the bodies of the dead. Europe correspondent Catherine Diss filed this report.
Immense joy and jubilation as young Ukrainian prisoners of war are brought home.
Hello, Mama!
This released prisoner, speaking to his mother on the phone, thanks her for her letters and says, "I love you. Thank you for waiting for me. We will see each other very soon." It was just as emotional for Russians also returning home. In this first part of the exchange, Russia and Ukraine released prisoners of war under 25 years old and others who had been severely wounded. It was one of the few things the two sides could agree on during direct talks earlier this month. There have been more than 60 prisoner swaps since the war broke out. Roman was among an earlier exchange in December. He told the ABC he spent close to 3 years in captivity.
They beat us, humiliated us, and tortured us. It all depended on how unlucky you were.
He was captured by Kremlin forces in May 2022 after the infamous Azov Steel siege in the port city of Mariupol. His comrade Vadim also surrendered. He recorded this message from inside the notorious Holivka prison.
I am in captivity. I am alive. I am healthy. I want to say hello to my loved ones.
He lost 40 kilograms, almost half his body weight while in detention, and now has lifelong injuries.
I am undergoing rehabilitation now at the Military Medical Commission. I was a healthy man before the war, and now I feel really poorly.
Roman also endured severe physical and psychological harm.
They damaged my neck because they hit me on my neck. I had a big tumour and my neck still hurts. My back is in pain, my knee hurts. There are constant reminders of that time I once remember. I have huge psychological issues.
Coming home has been a lifesaver for these tired, sick and injured soldiers. For Vadim, it was memories of home that got him through.
I was in captivity for 2 years and 8 months. It was my belief that helped me during that entire time. My belief in my family, my belief in Ukraine, and my belief in God.
Holding out hope in the most testing of times. This is Catherine Diss in London, reporting for AM.
They catch fire easily, are too hard to repair, and don't actually reduce emissions. Just some of the persistent pieces of misinformation around electric vehicles the industry has been doing its best to dispel. And despite the overwhelming evidence showing EVs are safe, new research shows the myths are still spreading. Angus Randall reports.
I kicked through the window because everything stopped.
Yeah.
The power didn't work, the door didn't open, the windows didn't go down.
A Tesla owner in Canada describes smashing a window to escape his car after it started smoking and then burst into flames. It's not hard to find dramatic footage online of electric vehicles catching fire, and it's helped fuel the myth that EVs are dangerous.
While EVs, if they catch fire, it's quite a considerable hazard. They're actually no more likely to catch fire than regular combustion engines.
Dr. Samuel Pearson is from the University of Queensland's Net Zero Observatory. His team asked people in Australia, Europe and the United States about some of the biggest EV myths.
You know, EVs are intentionally complex to prevent DIY, or that the magnetic fields lead to health issues.
Participants were randomly selected across the political and demographic spectrum, and around half of those surveyed believed misinformation about EVs.
We had kind of rates of agreement at around 40 to 50%. So I think, for example, the EV myth about them being more likely to catch fire, I think that was about 56% of folks, so like almost close to 60. Were saying that they agreed or strongly agreed with that one.
Dr. Pearson says owning an electric vehicle didn't actually change the levels of belief in misinformation. What could change people's minds comes from an unlikely source, artificial intelligence.
We found in our study that having a brief interaction with ChatGPT reduced the levels of misinformation endorsement by about 9%. And that really comes down to these models like ChatGPT being real, kind of empathic presenters of quite factual information.
Do you think a lot of people would be surprised by that, given AI itself is a new technology that a lot of people don't have a lot of trust in?
Yeah, totally. And the heavy disclaimer with all of this is that this reflects AI as it currently stands. And so, you know, there's a lot of different AI models. You know, ChatGPT is one of the more widely used ones. But as these models continue to get released, it's entirely possible that they could actually amplify misinformation.
Aman Gore is from the Electric Vehicle Council. He says there are also low-tech ways to dispel misinformation about EVs.
Speak to your friend who's recently bought an EV and get them to provide their experience. We find that the vast majority of people who have bought an EV and driving one are not going back to a petrol car because they're saving thousands of dollars per year and they're noticing that their car isn't putting carbon dioxide into the environment.
Aman Gore from the Electric Vehicle Council there, Angus Randall reporting. Buying a home in Australia is expensive, but selling a home is also getting more expensive. Australia's consumer watchdog is probing the digital real estate giant REA Group over price gouging concerns on listing prices. The group is responsible for the popular realestate.com.au website, with the watchdog saying this investigation comes after years of complaints. Nassim Kadem reports.
It now costs more to advertise a home for sale in Australia than almost anywhere else in the world. Consumer Pam Tyndall sold her home in May. She discovered one major player, $32 billion publicly listed REA Group, reaps most of the online advertising fees.
We were quite surprised on how it was. We had no choice, really, to pay the price, no negotiating, and it's all... dominated by one company.
According to REA Group's own figures, the realestate.com.au site attracts more than 133 million average visits each month, almost four times more than rival Domain. Tim McKibben is the CEO of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales. He says REA Group are very close to having a monopoly.
As REA became more and more dominant in the market, they've been able to ratchet their fees up. So in some cases, you can be paying $3,000 or $4,000 or more for your classified ad.
Aaron Scott runs Bright Agent, an online portal that connects buyers with agents. He says REA's listing fees go up every year and are based on the suburb a property is sold in.
Yeah, well, essentially what you're seeing is a postcode tax. So realestate.com.au are effectively saying if you're from a more affluent area, you have to pay more to list your property on their portal to get the right amount of visibility.
On top of the cost to list on the portal, REA Group charges real estate agents subscription fees that are also often passed on to the consumer. Agents like Joe Mooney, who sells homes in Melbourne's northeast, doesn't feel agents and consumers are getting a fair go. Her subscription fee, which allows her to place a certain number of properties on the portal each month, is rising by 34% on July 1.
It doesn't cost any more money for them to host the ad. It's cyberspace. It's a cloud.
An REA spokesman told ABC News listing a property online is not free. He said the company's pricing reflects a small percentage of the property's sale and the average increase for listings this year is 7%. On subscription fees charged to agents, he said this is the first time they've changed in over a decade because of big investments to enhance the service. Tim McKibben says agents worry REA could use the wealth of data gathered about consumer habits to start charging them for leads. His fear is that agents could be wiped out altogether, although REA says that's not their strategy.
The industry remains concerned that that is their logical trajectory. Now, we do know that's possible because in the United States, there is one of the portals over there has done just that.
It could take up to a year before the ACCC hands down its findings.
Nassim Kadem reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Breaking up can be hard and fascinating to watch from afar. So where is the disintegration of the relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk up to now? Today, Jeff Kabaservis from the centre-right think tank, the Niskanen Centre, on the real-world consequences of the split. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.